with you. Give up too much, and you might find a headquarters for the Knights Radiant in every major city across Roshar. Rather than working together, you'll have them competing to recruit. He was right, unfortunately. Dalinar hated turning knowledge into bargaining chips, but what if this was why he'd always failed in his negotiations with the High Princes? He wanted to be honest, straightforward, and let the pieces fall where they may. But it seemed that someone better at the game, and more willing to break the rules, always snatched the pieces from the air as he dropped them, then set them down the way they wanted. "And," he said quickly for Calame to add, "we would be happy to send our Radiants to train those you discover, then introduce them to the system and fraternity of Urethiru, to which each of them has a right by nature of their oaths." Calame added this, then twisted the span reed to indicate they were done and waiting for a reply.
"We will consider this," Calame read as the span reed scribbled across the page. "The Crown of Thelenor thanks you for your interest in our people, and we will consider negotiations regarding your offer of troops. We have sent some of our few remaining cutters to track down the fleeing Parshmen and will inform you of what we discover. Until we speak again, High Prince."
"Storms," Navani said. "She reverted to Queen's speak. We lost her somewhere in there."
Dalinar sat down in the seat next to her and let out a long sigh.
"Dalinar?" she said.
"I'm fine, Navani," he said. "I can't expect glowing commitments to cooperation on my first attempt. We'll just have to keep trying." The words were more optimistic than he felt. He wished he could talk to these people in person instead of over Spanreed. They talked to the Princess of Ysir next, followed by the Prince of Tashik. They didn't have oath gates and were less essential to his plan, but he wanted to at least open lines of communication with them. Neither gave him more than vague answers. Without the Azish Emperor's blessing, he wouldn't be able to get any of the smaller Makabaki kingdoms to commit. Perhaps the Imuli or the Tukari would listen, but he'd only ever get one of those two, considering their long-standing feud. At the end of the last conference, Aladar and his daughter excusing themselves, Dalinar stretched, feeling worn down. And this wasn't the end of it. He would have discussions with the monarchs of Eerie. It had three, strangely. The Oathgate at Ral Elorim was in their lands, making them important, and they held sway over nearby Rira, which had another Oathgate. Beyond that, of course, there were the Shin to deal with. They hated using span reeds, so Navani had poked at them through a Thalen merchant who had been willing to relay information. Dalinar's shoulder protested as he stretched. He had found middle age to be like an assassin, quiet, creeping along behind him. Much of the time he would go about his life as he always had until an unexpected ache or pain gave warning. He was not the youth he had once been. "And bless the Almighty for that," he thought idly, bidding farewell to Navani, who wanted to sift through information reports from various Spanreed stations around the world. Aladar's daughter and scribes were gathering them in bulk for her. Dalinar collected several of his guards, leaving others for Navani should she need some extra hands, and climbed up along the rows of seats to the room's exit at the top. Hovering just outside the doorway, like an axe hound banished from the warmth of the fire, stood Elikar.
"Your Majesty," Dalinar said, starting, "I'm glad you could make the meeting. Are you feeling better?"
"Why do they refuse you, uncle?" Elikar asked, ignoring the question. "Do they think perhaps you will try to usurp their thrones?"
Dalinar drew in his breath sharply, and his guards looked embarrassed to be standing nearby. They backed up to give him and the king privacy.
"Elikar," Dalinar said.
"You likely think I say this in spite," the king said, poking his head into the room, noting his mother, then looking back at Dalinar. "I don't. You are better than I am. A better soldier, a better person, and certainly a better king."
"You do yourself a disservice, Elikar.
You must—" "Oh, save your platitudes, Dalinar. For once in your life, just be honest with me."
"You think I haven't been?"
Elikar raised his hand and lightly touched his own chest.
Perhaps you have been, at times. Perhaps the liar here is me, lying to tell myself I could do this, that I could be a fraction of the man my father was. No, don't interrupt, Dalinar. Let me have my say. Void bringers? Ancient cities full of wonder? The desolations?
Elikar shook his head.
Perhaps I'm a fine king. Not extraordinary, but not an abject failure. But in the face of these events, the world needs better than fine.
There seemed a fatalism to his words, and that sent a worried shiver through Dalinar.
Elikar, what are you saying?
Elikar strode into the chamber and called down to those at the bottom of the rows of seats.
Mother? Brightness Teshav, would you witness something for me?
Storms, no, Dalinar thought, hurrying after Elikar. Don't do this, son.
We all must accept the consequences of our actions, uncle,
Elikar said.
I've been learning this very slowly, as I can be as dense as a stone. But, uncle, am I your king?
Elikar demanded.
Yes.
Well, I shouldn't be.
He knelt, shocking Navani and causing her to pull to a stop 3/4 of the way up the steps.
Dalinar Kholin, Elikar said in a loud voice, I swear to you now, there are princes and high princes. Why not kings and high kings? I give an oath, immutable and witnessed, that I accept you as my monarch. As Alethkar is to me, I am to you.
Dalinar breathed out, looking to Navani's aghast face, then down to his nephew, kneeling as a vassal on the floor.
You did ask for this, uncle, Elikar said. Not specifically in words, but it is the only place we could have gone. You have slowly been taking command ever since you decided to trust those visions.
I've tried to include you, Dalinar said.
Silly, impotent words. He should be better than that.
You are right, Elikar. I'm sorry.
Are you? Elikar asked. Are you really?
I'm sorry, Dalinar said, for your pain. I'm sorry that I didn't handle this better. I'm sorry that this must be. Before you make this oath, tell me what you expect that it entails.
I've already said the words,
Elikar said, growing red-faced.
Before witnesses, it is done.
Oh, stand up, Dalinar said, grabbing him by the arm and hauling him to his feet.
Don't be dramatic. If you really want to swear this oath, I'll let you. But let's not pretend you can sweep into a room, shout a few words, and assume it's a legal contract.
Elikar pulled his arm free and rubbed it.
Won't even let me abdicate with dignity.
You're not abdicating, Navani
said, joining them. She shot a glare at the guards, who stood watching with slack jaws, and they grew white at the glare. She pointed at them as if to say not a word of this to anyone else.
Elikar, you intend to shove your uncle into a position above you. He's right to ask. What will this mean for Alethkar?
Elikar swallowed.
He should give up his lands to his heir. Dalinar is a king of somewhere else, after all. Dalinar? High king of Urethiru. Maybe the Shattered Plains.
He stood straighter, speaking more certainly.
Dalinar must stay out of the direct management of my lands. He can give me commands, but I decide how to see them accomplished.
It sounds reasonable,
Navani said, glancing at Dalinar. Reasonable, but gut-wrenching. The kingdom he'd fought for, the kingdom he'd forged in pain, exhaustion, and blood, now rejected him.
This is my land now, Dalinar thought, this tower covered in cold spren. I can accept these terms, though at times I might need to give commands to your high princes.
As long as they're in your domain,
Elikar said, a hint of stubbornness to his voice, I consider them under your authority.
While they visit Urethiru, or the Shattered Plains, command as you wish. When they return to my kingdom, you must go through me.
He looked to Dalinar and then glanced down, as if embarrassed to be making demands.
Very well, Dalinar said. Though we need to work this out with scribes before we make the change officially. And before we go too far, we should make certain there is still an Alethkar for you to rule.
I've been thinking the same thing, Uncle. I want to lead our forces to Alethkar and recapture our homeland. Something is wrong in Kulinar. More than these riots or my wife's supposed behavior, more than the Spanreeds going still. The enemy is doing something in the city. I'll take an army to stop it and save the kingdom.
Elokar? Leading troops? Dalinar had been imagining himself leading a force, cutting through the Voidbringer ranks, sweeping them from Alethkar and marching into Kulinar to restore order. Truth was, though, it didn't make sense for either of them to lead such an assault.
Elokar, Dalinar said, leaning in. I've been considering something. The Oath Gate is attached to the palace itself. We don't need to march an army all the way to Alethkar. All we need to do is restore that device. Once it works, we can transport our forces into the city to secure the palace, restore order, and fend off the Voidbringers.
Get into the city, Elokar said. Uncle, to do that, we might need an army in the first place.
No, Dalinar said. A small team could reach Kulinar far faster than an army. As long as there was a Radiant with them, they could sneak in, restore the Oath Gate, and open the way for the rest of us.
Elokar perked up.
Yes! I'll do it, Uncle. I'll take a team and reclaim our home. Aesudan is there. If the rioting is still happening, she's fighting against it.
That wasn't what the reports, before they'd cut off, had suggested to Dalinar. If anything, the Queen was the cause of the riots. And he certainly hadn't been intending Elokar to go on this mission himself. Consequences. The lad was earnest, as he'd always been. Besides, Elokar seemed to have learned something from his near death at the hands of assassins. He was certainly humbler now than he'd been in years past.
It is fitting, Dalinar said, that their king should be the one who saves them. I will see that you have whatever resources you need, Elokar.
Glowing glory spren orbs burst around Elokar. He grinned at them.
I only seem to see those when I'm around you, Uncle. Funny. For all that I should resent you, I don't. It's hard to resent a man who is doing his best. I'll do it. I'll save Alethkar. I need one of your Radiants. The hero, preferably.
The hero?
The bridgeman, Elokar said. The soldier. He needs to go with me, so if I screw up and fail, someone will be there to save the city anyway.
Dalinar blinked.
That's very,
I've had ample chances to reflect lately, Uncle, Elokar said. The Almighty has preserved me despite my stupidity. I'll bring the bridgeman with me and I'll observe him, figure out why he's so special, see if he'll teach me to be like him. And if I fail... He shrugged. Well, Alethkar is in safe hands regardless, right?
Dalinar nodded, bemused.
I need to make plans, Elokar said. I've only just recovered from my wounds, but I can't leave until the hero returns anyway. Could he fly me and my chosen team to the city? That would certainly be the fastest way. I will want every report we've had from Kulinar, and I need to study the Oathgate device in person. Yes, and have drawings done comparing it to the one in the city, and...
He beamed.
Thank you, Uncle. Thank you for believing in me. If only this small amount.
Dalinar nodded to him, and Elokar retreated, a spring in his step. Dalinar sighed, feeling overwhelmed by the exchange. Navani hovered by his side as he settled down in one of the seats for the Radiance, beside a pedestal for a little spren. On one side he had a king swearing to him an oath he didn't want. On the other, he had an entire group of monarchs who wouldn't listen to his most rational of suggestions.
Storms. Dalinar? Calamy said. Dalinar!
He leaped to his feet, and Navani spun. Calamy was watching one of the Spanreeds, which had started writing.
What was it now? What terrible news awaited him?
Your Majesty, Calamy read from the page,
I consider your offer generous and your advice wise. We have located the device you call an Oath Gate. One of my people has come forward and, remarkably, claims to be Radiant. Her Spren directed her to speak with me. We plan to use her shard blade to test the device. If it works, I will come to you in all haste. It is well that someone is attempting to organize a resistance to the evils that befall us. The nations of Roshar must put aside their squabbles, and the reemergence of the holy city of Urethiru is proof to me that the Almighty guides your hand. I look forward to counseling with you and adding my forces to yours in a joint operation to protect these lands. She looked up at him, amazed. It was sent by Taravangian, king of Yakaved and Karbranth. Taravangian? Dalinar hadn't expected him to reply so quickly. He was said to be a kindly, if somewhat simple man, perfect for ruling a small city-state with the help of a governing council. His elevation to king of Yakaved was widely seen as an act of spite from the former king, who hadn't wanted to give the throne to any of his rivals' houses. The words still warmed Dalinar. Someone had listened. Someone was willing to join him. Bless that man. Bless him. If Dalinar failed everywhere else, at least he would have King Taravangian at his side.
13. Chaperone. I ask only that you read or listen to these words. From Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan breathed out Stormlight and stepped through it, feeling it envelop her, transform her. She'd been moved upon request to Sabariel's section of Urethiru, in part because he'd promised her a room with a balcony, fresh air, and a view of the mountain peaks. If she couldn't be completely free of this building's shadowed depths, then at least she could have a home on the borders. She pulled at her hair, pleased to see it had turned black. She had become Vale, a disguise she'd been working on for some time. Shallan held up hands that were calloused and worked, even the safe hand. Not that Vale was unfeminine. She kept her nails filed and liked to dress nicely, keep her hair brushed. She simply didn't have time for frivolities. A good sturdy coat and trousers suited Vale better than a flowing hava, and she had no time for an extended sleeve covering her safe hand. She'd wear a glove, thank you very much. At the moment she was dressed in her nightgown. She'd change later, once she was ready to sneak out into Urethiru's halls. She needed some practice first. Though she felt bad about the use of Stormlight when everyone else was scrimping, Dalinar had told her to train with her powers. She strode through her chamber, adopting Vale's gait. Confident and sturdy, never prim. You couldn't balance a book on Vale's head as she walked, but she'd happily balance one on your face after she knocked you unconscious. She circled the room several times, crossing the patch of evening light from the window. Her room was ornamented by bright circular patterns of strata on the walls. The stone was smooth to the touch, and a knife couldn't scratch it. There wasn't much furniture, though Shallan was hopeful that the latest scavenging expeditions to the war camps would return with something she could appropriate from Sabariel. For now, she did what she could with some blankets, a single stool, and, blessedly, a hand mirror. She'd hung it on the wall, tied to a stone knob that she assumed was for hanging pictures. She checked her face in the mirror. She wanted to get to the point where she could become Vale at a moment's notice, without needing to review sketches. She prodded at her features, but of course as the more angular nose and pronounced forehead were a result of light weaving, she couldn't feel them. When she frowned, Vale's face mimicked the motion perfectly. "Something to drink, please," she said. "No, rougher. Drink. Now." "Too strong?" Pattern said. The voice becomes a good lie. Thank you. I've been working on sounds. Vale's voice was deeper than Shallan's, rougher. She started to wonder how far could she go in changing how things sounded. For now, she wasn't sure she'd gotten the lips right in the illusion. She sauntered over to her art supplies and flipped open her sketchbook, looking for renditions of Vale she'd drawn instead of going to dinner with Sabariel and Palona. The first page of the sketchbook was of the corridor with the twisting strata she'd passed through the other day, lines of madness curling toward darkness. She flipped to the next, a picture of one of the tower's budding markets. Thousands of merchants, washwomen, prostitutes, innkeepers, and craftsmen of all varieties were setting up in Urethiru. Shallan knew well how many. She'd been the one to bring them all through the Oath Gate. In her sketch, the black upper reaches of the large market cavern loomed over tiny figures scurrying between tents, holding fragile lights. The next was another tunnel into darkness, and the next, then a room where the strata coiled about one another in a mesmerizing manner. She hadn't realized she'd done so many. She flipped 20 pages before she found her sketches of Vale. Yes, the lips were right. The build was wrong, however. Vale had a lean strength, and that wasn't coming through in the nightgown. It looked too much like Shallan's figure beneath. Someone knocked on the wooden plate hung outside her rooms. She had just a cloth draping the doorway right now. Many of the tower's doors had warped over the years. Hers had been ripped out, and she was still waiting on a replacement. The one knocking would be Palona, who had once again noticed that Shallan had skipped dinner. Shallan sucked in a breath, destroying the image of Vale, recovering some of the stormlight from her light weaving. Come, she said. Honestly, it didn't seem to matter to Palona that Shallan was a storming knight radiant now. She'd still mother her all the... Adolin stepped in, carrying a large plate of food in one hand, some books under the other arm. He saw her and stumbled, nearly dropping it all. Shallan froze, then yelped and tucked her bare safe hand behind her back. Adolin didn't even have the decency to blush at finding her practically naked. He balanced the food in his hand, recovering from his stumble, and then grinned. Out! Shallan said, waving her free hand at him. Out, out, out! He backed away awkwardly, threw the draped cloth over the doorway. Stormfather! Shallan's blush was probably so bright they could have used her as a signal to send the army to war. She pulled on a glove, then wrapped that in a safe pouch, then threw on the blue dress she had draped over the back of her chair and did up the sleeve. She didn't have the presence of mind to pull on her bodice vest first. Not that she really needed one anyway. She kicked it under a blanket instead. In my defense, Adolin said from outside, you did invite me in. I thought you were Palona, Shallan said, doing up the buttons on the side of her dress, which proved difficult, with three layers covering her safe hand. You know, you could check to see who is at your door. Don't make this my fault, Shallan said. You're the one slipping into young ladies' bedrooms practically unannounced. I knocked. The knock was feminine. It was Shallan. Did you knock with one hand or two? I'm carrying a storming platter of food. For you, by the way. Of course the knock was one-handed. And seriously, who knocks with two?
It was quite feminine, then. I'd have thought that imitating a woman to catch a glimpse of a young lady in her undergarments was beneath you, Adolin Cullen.
Oh, for damnation's sake, Shallan. Can I come in now? And just so we're clear, I'm a man, and you're betrothed. My name is Adolin Cullen. I was born under the sign of the Nine, I have a birthmark on the back of my left thigh, and I had crab curry for breakfast. Anything else you need to know?
She poked her head out, pulling the cloth tight around her neck.
Back of your left thigh, eh? What's a girl got to do to sneak a glimpse of that?
Knock like a man, apparently.
She gave him a grin. Just a sec. This dress is being a pain.
She ducked back into the room.
Yes, yes, take your time. I'm not standing out here holding a heavy platter of food, smelling it after having skipped dinner so I could dine with you.
It's good for you, Shallan said. Builds strength or something. Isn't that the sort of thing you do? Strangle rocks, stand on your head, throw boulders around?
Yes, I have quite my share of murdered rocks stuffed under my bed.
Shallan grabbed her dress with her teeth at the neck to pull it tight, helping with the buttons. Maybe.
What is it with women and their undergarments, anyway?
Adolin said, the platter clinking as some of the plates slid against one another.
I mean, that shift covers basically the same parts as a formal dress.
It's the decency of it, Shallan said around a mouthful of fabric. Besides, certain things have a tendency to poke out through a shift.
Still seems arbitrary to me.
Oh, and men aren't arbitrary about clothing? A uniform is basically the same as any other coat, right? Besides, aren't you the one who spends his afternoons searching through fashion folios?
He chuckled and started a reply, but Shallan, finally dressed, swept back the sheet on her doorway. Adolin stood up from leaning against the wall of the corridor and took her in. Frazzled hair, dress that she had missed two buttons on, cheeks flushed. Then he grinned a dopey grin. Ash's eyes. He actually thought she was pretty. This wonderful, princely man actually liked being with her. She'd traveled to the ancient city of the Knights Radiant, but compared to Adolin's affection, all the sights of Urethiru were dun spheres. He liked her, and he brought her food. Do not find a way to screw this up, Shallan thought to herself as she took the books from under his arm. She stepped aside, letting him enter and set the platter on the floor.
Polona said you hadn't eaten, he said, and then she found out I'd skipped dinner,
So she sent you with a lot, Shallan said, inspecting the platter piled high with dishes, flatbreads, and shell food.
Yeah, Adolin said, standing and scratching at his head. I think it's a Herdazian thing.
Shallan hadn't realized how hungry she was. She'd been intending to get something at one of the taverns later tonight while prowling about wearing Vale's face. Those taverns had set up in the main market, despite Navani's attempts to send them elsewhere, and Sabariel's merchants had quite the stock to sell. Now that this was all before her, well, she didn't worry much about decorum as she settled down on the ground and started to spoon herself up a thin, watery curry with vegetables. Adolin remained standing. He did look sharp in that blue uniform, though admittedly she'd never really seen him in anything else. Birthmark on the thigh, eh?
You'll have to sit on the ground, Shallan said. No chairs yet.
I just realized, he said. This is your bedroom.
And my drawing room, and my sitting room, and my dining room, and my Adolin's as obvious things room. It's quite versatile, this room. Singular. Of mine. Why?
I'm just wondering if it's proper, he said.
Then actually blushed, which was adorable.
For us to be in here alone.
Now you're worried about propriety?
Well, I did recently get lectured about it.
That wasn't a lecture, Shallan said, taking a bite of food. The succulent tastes overwhelmed her mouth, bringing on that delightful sharp pain and mixing of flavor that you only got from the first bite of something sweet. She closed her eyes and smiled, savoring it.
So, not a lecture? Adolin said. Was there to be more to that quip?
Sorry, she said, opening her eyes. It wasn't a lecture. It was a creative application of my tongue to keep you distracted. Looking at his lips, she could think of some other creative applications for her tongue. Right. She took a deep breath. It would be inappropriate, Shallan said, if we were alone. Fortunately, we are not.
Your ego doesn't count as a separate individual, Shallan.
Ha, wait. You think I have an ego?
It just sounded good. I don't mean... Not that. Why are you grinning?
Sorry, Shallan said, making two fists before herself and shivering in glee. She'd spent so long feeling timid. It was so satisfying to hear a reference to her confidence. It was working! Yasna's teaching about practicing and acting like she was in control. It was working! Well, except for that whole part about having to admit to herself that she'd killed her mother. As soon as she thought of it, she instinctively tried to shove the memory away, but it wouldn't budge. She'd spoken it to Pattern as a truth, which were the odd ideals of the Lightweavers. It was stuck in her mind, and every time she thought about it, the gaping wound flared up with pain again. Shallan had killed her mother. Her father had covered it up, pretended he'd murdered his wife, and the event had destroyed his life, driving him to anger and destruction. Until eventually Shallan had killed him, too.
Shallan? Adolin asked. Are you well?
No. Sure, fine. Anyway, we aren't alone. Pattern, come here, please. She held out her hand, palm up. He reluctantly moved down from the wall where he'd been watching. As always, he made a ripple in whatever he crossed. Be it cloth or stone, like there was something under the surface. His complex, fluctuating pattern of lines was always changing, melding, vaguely circular, but with surprising tangents. He crossed up her dress and onto her hand, then split out from beneath her skin and rose into the air, expanding fully into three dimensions. He hovered there, a black, eye-bending network of shifting lines, some patterns shrinking while others expanded, rippling across his surface like a field of moving grass. She would not hate him. She could hate the sword she'd used to kill her mother, but not him. She managed to push aside the pain for now, not forgetting it, but hopefully not letting it spoil her time with Adolin. "Prince Adolin," Shallan said. I believe you've heard my friend's voice before. Let me introduce you formally. This is Pattern. Adolin knelt, reverent, and stared at the mesmerizing geometries. Shallan didn't blame him. She'd lost herself more than once in that network of lines and shapes that almost seemed to repeat, but never quite did.
Your Spren, Adolin said. A Shallan Spren.
Pattern sniffed in annoyance at that. He's called a cryptic, she said. Every order of Radiant bonds a different variety of Spren, and that bond lets me do what I do.
Craft illusions, Adolin said softly. Like that one with the map the other day.
Shallan smiled, and, realizing she had just a smidge of stormlight left from her illusion earlier, was unable to resist showing off. She raised her sleeved safe hand and breathed out, sending a shimmering patch of stormlight above the blue cloth. It formed into a small image of Adolin from her sketches of him in his shard plate. This one remained frozen, shard blade on his shoulder, face plate up, like a little doll.
"This is an incredible talent, Shallan," Adolin said, poking at the version of himself, which fuzzed, offering no resistance.
He paused, then poked at Pattern, who shied back.
Why do you insist on hiding this, pretending that you're a different order than you are?
Well, she said, thinking fast, and closing her hand, dismissing the image of Adolin. I just think it might give us an edge. Sometimes secrets are important.
Adolin nodded slowly.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Anyway, Shallan said, Pattern, you're to be our chaperone tonight.
What? Pattern said with a hum. Is a chaperone?
That is someone who watches two young people when they are together to make certain they don't do anything inappropriate.
Inappropriate? Pattern said. Such as dividing by zero?
What? Shallan asked, looking to Adolin, who shrugged. Look, just keep an eye on us. It will be all right. Pattern hummed, melting down into his two-dimensional form and taking up residence on the side of a bowl. He seemed content there, like a Kremlin snuggled into its crack. Unable to wait any longer, Shallan dug into her meal. Adolin settled down across from her and attacked his own food. For a time, Shallan ignored her pain and savored the moment. Good food, good company, the setting sun casting ruby and topaz light across the mountains and into the room. She felt like drawing this scene, but knew it was the type of moment she couldn't capture on a page. It wasn't about content or composition, but the pleasure of living. The trick to happiness wasn't in freezing every momentary pleasure and clinging to each one, but in ensuring one's life would produce many future moments to anticipate. Adolin, after finishing an entire plate of Stranahaspers steamed in the shell, picked out a few chunks of pork from a creamy red curry, then put them on a plate and handed them in her direction.
Want to try a bite?
Shallan made a gagging noise.
Come on, he said, wagging the plate. It's delicious.
It would burn my lips off, Adolin Colin, Shallan said. Don't think I didn't notice you picking the absolute spiciest concoction Polona sent. Men's food is dreadful. How can you taste anything beneath all that spice?
Keeps it from being bland, Adolin said, stabbing one of the chunks and popping it in his mouth. There's nobody here but us. You can try it.
She eyed it, remembering the times as a child when she'd sneaked tastes of men's food, though not this specific dish. Pattern buzzed.
Is this the inappropriate thing I'm supposed to stop you from doing?
No, Shallan said, and Pattern settled back down. Perhaps a chaperone, she thought, who believes basically everything I tell him isn't going to be the most effective. Still, with a sigh, she grabbed a chunk of the pork and some flatbread. She had left Yakoved hunting new experiences, after all. She tried a bite, and was given immediate reason to regret her decisions in life. Eyes brimming with tears, she scrambled for the cup of water Adolin, insufferably, had picked up to hand toward her. She gulped that down, though it didn't seem to do anything. She followed it by wiping her tongue with a napkin, in the most feminine way possible, of course. I hate you, she said, drinking his water next. Adolin chuckled.
Oh,
Pattern said suddenly, bursting up from the bowl to hover in the air.
You were talking about mating. I'm to make sure you don't accidentally mate. As mating is forbidden by human society until you have first performed appropriate rituals. Yes, yes. Dictates of custom require following certain patterns before you copulate. I've been studying this.
Oh, Stormfather,
Shallan said, covering her eyes with her free hand. A few shame-spren even peeked in for a glimpse before vanishing. Twice in 1 week.
Very well, you two, Pattern said. No mating. No mating.
He hummed to himself as if pleased, then sank down onto a plate.
Well, that was humiliating, Shallan said. Can we maybe talk about those books you brought? Or ancient Vorin theology? Or strategies for counting grains of sand?
Anything other than what just happened? Please?
Adolin chuckled, then reached for a slim notebook that was on top of the pile. May Aladar sent teams to question Vedekar Peril's family and friends. They discovered where he was before he died, who last saw him, and wrote down anything suspicious. I thought we could read the report.
And the rest of the books?
You seemed lost when Father asked you about Makabaki politics, Adolin said, pouring some wine, merely a soft yellow. So I asked around, and it seems that some of the Ardents hauled their entire libraries out here. I was able to get a servant to locate you a few books I'd enjoyed on the Makabaki.
Books? Shallan said. You?
I don't spend all my time hitting people with swords, Shallan, Adolin said. Yasna and Aunt Navani made very certain that my youth was filled with interminable periods spent listening to Ardents lecture me on politics and trade. Some of it stuck in my brain, against my natural inclinations. Those three books are the best of the ones I remember having read to me, though the last one is an updated version. I thought it might help.
That's thoughtful, she said. Really, Adolin? Thank you.
I figured, you know, if we're going to move forward with the betrothal.
Why wouldn't we?
Shallan said, suddenly panicked.
I don't know. You're a radiant, Shallan.
Some kind of half-divine being from mythology. And all along I was thinking we were giving you a favorable match.
He stood up and started pacing.
Damnation. I didn't mean to say it like that. I'm sorry. I keep worrying that I'm going to screw this up somehow.
You worry you're going to screw it up? Shallan said, feeling a warmth inside that wasn't completely due to the wine.
I'm not good with relationships, Shallan.
Is there anyone who actually is? I mean, is there really someone out there who looks at relationships and thinks, you know what, I've got this? Personally, I rather think we're all collectively idiots about it.
It's worse for me.
Adolin, dear, the last man I had a romantic interest in was not only an Ardent, forbidden to court me in the first place, but also turned out to be an assassin who was merely trying to obtain my favor so he could get close to Yasna. I think you overestimate everyone else's capability in this regard.
He stopped pacing.
An assassin?
Seriously, Shallan said. He almost killed me with a loaf of poisoned bread.
Wow. I have to hear this story.
Fortunately, I just told it to you. His name was Capsal, and he was so incredibly sweet to me that I can almost forgive him for trying to kill me.
Adolin grinned. Well, it's nice to hear that I don't have a high bar to jump. All I have to do is not poison you. Though you shouldn't be telling me about past lovers. You'll make me jealous.
Please, Shallan said, dipping her bread in some leftover sweet curry. Her tongue still hadn't recovered. You've courted like half the war camps.
It's not that bad.
Isn't it? From what I hear, I'd have to go to Herdaz to find an eligible woman you haven't pursued.
She held out her hand to him to help her to her feet.
Are you mocking my failings?
No, I'm lauding them, she said, standing up beside him. You see, Adolin, dear, if you hadn't wrecked all those other relationships, you wouldn't be here, with me.
She pulled close.
And so, in reality, you're the greatest at relationships there ever was. You ruined only the wrong ones, you see.
He leaned down. His breath smelled of spices. His uniform of the crisp, clean starch Dalinar required. His lips touched hers, and her heart fluttered. So warm.
No mating!
She started, pulling out of the kiss-defined pattern hovering beside them, pulsing quickly through shapes. Adolin bellowed a laugh, and Shallan couldn't help joining in at the ridiculousness of it. She stepped back from him, but kept hold on his hand.
Neither of us is going to mess this up, she said to him, squeezing his hand. Despite what might at times seem like our best efforts otherwise,
Promise? He asked.
I promise. Let's look at this notebook of yours and see what it says about our murderer.
14. Squires can't capture. In this record, I hold nothing back. I will try not to shy away from difficult topics or paint myself in a dishonestly heroic light. From Oathbringer, Preface. Kaladin crept through the rains, sidling in a wet uniform across the rocks until he was able to peek through the trees at the Voidbringers. Monstrous terrors from the mythological past, enemies of all that was right and good, destroyers who had laid waste to civilization countless times. They were playing cards. What in damnation's depths? Kaladin thought. The Voidbringers had posted a single guard, but the creature had simply been sitting on a tree stump, easy to avoid. A decoy, Kaladin had assumed, figuring he would find the true guard watching from the heights of the trees. If there was a hidden guard, though, Kaladin had missed spotting them, and they'd missed Kaladin in equal measure. The dim light served him well, as he was able to settle between some bushes right at the edge of the Voidbringer camp. Between trees they had stretched tarps, which leaked horribly. In one place they'd made a proper tent, fully enclosed with walls, and he couldn't see what was inside. There wasn't enough shelter, so many sat out in the rain. Kaladin spent a torturous few minutes expecting to be spotted. All they had to do was notice that these bushes had drawn in their leaves at his touch. Nobody looked, fortunately. The leaves timidly peeked back out, obscuring him. Syl landed on his arm, hands on her hips as she surveyed the Voidbringers. One of them had a set of wooden Hardassian cards, and he sat at the edge of the camp, directly before Kaladin, using a flat surface of stone as a table. A female sat opposite him. They looked different from what he expected. For one thing, their skin was a different shade. Many parchmen here in Alethkar had marbled white and red skin, rather than the deep red on black, like Rulaine from Bridge 4. They didn't wear war form, though neither did they wear some terrible, powerful form. Though they were squat and bulky, their only carapace ran along the sides of their forearms and jutted out at their temples, leaving them with full heads of hair. They still wore their simple slave smocks, tied at the waists with strings. No red eyes. Did that change, perhaps, like his own eyes? The male, distinguished by a dark red beard, the hairs each unnaturally thick, finally placed a card in the rock next to several others.
"Can you do that?" the female asked. "I think so. You said squires can't capture, unless another card of mine is touching yours," the male said.
He scratched at his beard.
"I think."
Kaladin felt cold, like the rainwater was seeping in through his skin, penetrating all the way to his blood and washing through him. They spoke like a Lethe, not a hint of an accent. With his eyes closed, he wouldn't have been able to tell these voices from those of common dark-eyed villagers from Hearthstone, save for the fact that the female had a deeper voice than most human women.
"So," the female said, "you're saying you don't know how to play the game after all?"
The male began gathering up the cards.
"I should know, Ken. How many times did I watch them play? Standing there with my tray of drinks? I should be an expert at this, shouldn't I?" "Apparently not."
The female stood and walked over to another group who were trying to build a fire under a tarp without much success. It took a special kind of luck to be able to get flames going outside during the weeping. Kaladin, like most in the military, had learned to live with a constant dampness. They had the stolen sacks of grain. Kaladin could see them piled underneath one of the tarps. The grain had swollen, splitting several of the sacks. Several were eating soggy handfuls since they had no bowls. Kaladin wished he didn't immediately taste the mushy, awful stuff in his own mouth. He'd been given unspiced, boiled talu on many occasions. Often he'd considered it a blessing. The male who'd been speaking continued to sit on his rock,
holding up a wooden card. They were a lacquered set, durable. Kaladin had occasionally seen their like in the military. Men would save for months to get a set like this that wouldn't warp in the rain. The parchman looked so forlorn, staring down at his card, shoulders slumped.
"This is wrong," Kaladin whispered to Syl. "We've been so wrong."
Where were the destroyers? What had happened to the beasts with the red eyes that had tried to crush Dalinar's army? The terrible, haunting figures that Bridge Four had described to him?
"We thought we understood what was going to happen," Kaladin thought. "I was so sure."
"Alarm!" a sudden shrill voice called. "Alarm, you fools!"
Something zipped through the air, a glowing yellow ribbon, a streak of light in the dim afternoon shade.
"He's there!" the shrill voice said. "You're being watched! Beneath those shrubs!"
Kaladin burst up through the underbrush, ready to suck in stormlight and be away. Though fewer towns had any now, as it was running out again, he had a little left. The parchman seized cudgels made from branches or the handles of brooms. They bunched together and held the sticks like frightened villagers. No stance, no control. Kaladin hesitated.
"I could take them all in a fight even without stormlight."
He'd seen men hold weapons like that many times before. Most recently, he'd seen it inside the chasms when training the bridgemen. These were no warriors. Syl flitted up to him, prepared to become a blade.
"No," Kaladin whispered to her.
Then he held his hands to the sides, speaking more loudly.
"I surrender."
15. Brightness Radiant. I will express only direct, even brutal truth. You must know what I have done, and what those actions cost me. From Oathbringer, Preface. Brightlord Peril's body was found in the same area as Sadius's, Shallan said, pacing back and forth in her room as she flipped through pages of the report. "That can't be a coincidence. This tower is far too big. So we know where the murderer is prowling."
"Yeah, I suppose," Adolin said.
He lounged with his back against the wall, coat unbuttoned, while tossing a small leather ball filled with dried grain into the air and catching it again.
"I just think the murders could have been done by two different people."
"Same exact method of murder," Shallan said. "Body positioned the same way."
"Nothing else connecting them," Adolin said. "Sadius was slime, widely hated, and usually accompanied by guards. Peril was quiet, well-liked, and known for his administrative prowess. He was less a soldier than a manager."
The sun had fully set by now, and they'd set out spheres on the floor for light. The remnants of their meal had been carted away by a servant, and Pattern hummed happily on the wall near Adolin's head. Adolin glanced at him occasionally, looking uncomfortable, which she fully understood. She'd grown used to Pattern, but his lines were strange. "Wait until Adolin sees a cryptic in Shadesmar form," she thought, "with a full body but twisting shapes for his head." Adolin tossed the little stitched ball into the air and caught it with his right hand, the one that Renarin amazingly had healed. She wasn't the only one practicing with her powers. She was especially glad someone else had a shard blade now. When the high storms returned, and they began working the Oathgate in earnest, she'd have help. "These reports," Shallan said, tapping the notebook against her hand, "are both informative and useless. Nothing connects Peril and Sadius, save their both being light eyes, that and the part of the tower they were in. Perhaps mere opportunity drove the killer's choice of victims."
"You're saying someone happened to kill a high prince?" Adolin said. "By accident? Like a back-alley murder outside a pub?"
"Maybe. Brightness Aladar suggests in here that your father lay down some rules on people moving alone through empty parts of the tower."
"I still think there might be two murderers," Adolin said. "You know,
Like someone saw Sadeus dead and figured they could get away with killing someone else, blaming it on the first fellow. Oh, Adolin, Shallan thought. He'd arrived at a theory he liked, and now wouldn't let it go. It was a common mistake, warned of in her scientific books. Adolin did have one point. A high prince being murdered was unlikely to be random chance. There were no signs of Sadeus's shard blade, Oathbringer, being used by anyone. Not even a rumor of it. Maybe the second death is a kind of decoy? Shallan thought, riffling through the report again. An attempt to make it seem like random attacks? No, that was too convoluted, and she had no more evidence for it than Adolin had for his theory. That did leave her thinking. Maybe everyone was paying attention to these two deaths because they'd happened to important light eyes. Could there be other deaths they hadn't noticed because they'd happened to less prominent individuals? If a beggar had been found in Adolin's proverbial back alley behind a pub, would anyone have remarked upon it, even if he'd been stabbed through the eye? I need to get out there among them and see what I can find. She opened her mouth to tell him she should probably turn in, but he was already standing, stretching. I think we've done what we can with that, he said, nodding toward the report. At least for tonight. Yeah, Shallan said, feigning a yawn. Probably. So, Adolin said, then took a deep breath. There's something else. Shallan frowned. Something else? Why did he suddenly look like he was preparing to do something difficult? He's going to break off our betrothal, a part of her mind thought, though she pounced on that emotion and shoved it back behind the curtains where it belonged. Okay. This isn't easy, Adolin said. I don't want to offend Shallan, but you know how I had you eat that man's food?
Yes. If my tongue is particularly spicy in the coming days, I blame you.
Shallan, there's something similar that we need to talk about. Something about you we can't just ignore.
I killed my parents. I stabbed my mother through the chest and I strangled my father while singing to him.
You, Adolin said, have a shard blade.
I didn't want to kill her. I had to. I had to.
Adolin grabbed her by the shoulders, and she started, focusing on him. He was grinning.
You have a shard blade, Shallan! A new one! That's incredible! I dreamed for years of earning my blade. So many men spend their lives with that very dream and never see it fulfilled. And here you have one.
And that's a good thing. Right? She said, held in his grip with arms pulled tight against her body.
Of course it is, Adolin said, letting go of her. But, I mean, you're a woman.
Was it the makeup that tipped you off? Or the dress? Oh, it was the breasts, wasn't it? Always giving us away.
Shallan, this is serious.
I know, she said, calming her nerves.
Yes. Pattern can become a shard blade, Adolin.
I don't see what this has to do with anything. I can't give it away.
Stormfather, you want to teach me how to use it, don't you?
He grinned.
You said that Jasnah was a radiant too. Women, gaining shard blades. It's weird, but it's not like we can ignore it. What about plate? Do you have that hidden somewhere, too?
Not that I know of, she said. Her heart was beating quickly, her skin growing cold, her muscles tense. She fought against the sensation.
I don't know where plate comes from. I know it's not feminine, but who cares? You've got a sword. You should know how to use it. And custom can go to damnation. There, I said it.
He took a deep breath.
I mean, the bridge boy can have one, and he's dark-eyed. Well, he was.
Anyway, it's not so different from that.
Thank you, Shallan thought, for ranking all women as something equivalent to peasants. But she held her tongue. This was obviously an important moment for Adolin, and he was trying to be broad-minded. But thinking of what she'd done pained her. Holding the weapon would be worse. So much worse. She wanted to hide, but she couldn't. This truth refused to budge from her mind. Could she explain? So, you're right, but...
Great, Adolin said. Great. I brought the blade guards so we won't hurt each other. I stashed them back at the guard post. I'll go fetch them.
He was out the door a moment later. Shallan stood with her hand stretched toward him, objections dying on her lips. She curled her fingers up and brought her hand to her breast, her heart thundering within.
Pattern said. This is good. This needs to be done.
Shallan scrambled through the room to the small mirror she'd hung from the wall. She stared at herself, eyes wide, hair an utter mess. She'd started breathing in sharp, quick gasps.
I can't, she said. I can't be this person, Pattern. I can't just wield the sword. Some brilliant knight on a tower pretending she should be followed.
Pattern hummed softly a tone she'd come to recognize as confusion. The bewilderment of one species trying to comprehend the mind of another. Sweat trickled down Shallan's face, running beside her eye as she stared at herself. What did she expect to see? The thought of breaking down in front of Adolin heightened her tension. Her every muscle grew taut, and the corners of her vision started to darken. She could see only before herself, and she wanted to run, go somewhere. Be away. No, no, just be someone else. Hands shaking, she scrambled over and dug out her drawing pad. She ripped pages, flinging them out of the way to reach an empty one, then seized her charcoal pencil. Pattern moved over to her, a floating ball of shifting lines, buzzing in concern.
Shallan, please, what is wrong?
I can hide, Shallan thought, drawing at a frenzied pace. Shallan can flee and leave someone in her place.
It's because you hate me, Pattern said softly. I can die, Shallan. I can go. They will send you another to bond.
A high-pitched whine started to rise in the room, one Shallan didn't immediately recognize as coming from the back of her own throat. Pattern's words were like knives to her side.
No, please. Just draw.
Vail. Vail would be fine holding a sword. She didn't have Shallan's broken soul and hadn't killed her parents. She'd be able to do this.
No.
No, what would Adolin do if he returned and found a completely different woman in the room? He couldn't know of Vail. The lines she sketched, ragged and unrefined from the shaking pencil, quickly took the shape of her own face. But hair in a bun. A poised woman, not as flighty as Shallan, not as unintentionally silly. A woman who hadn't been sheltered. A woman hard enough, strong enough to wield this sword. A woman like Jasnah. Yes, Jasnah's subtle smile, composure, and self-confidence. Shallan outlined her own face with these ideals, creating a harder version of it. Could she be this woman?
I have to be, Shallan thought, drawing in stormlight from her satchel, then breathing it out in a puff around her.
She stood up as the change took hold. Her heartbeat slowed, and she wiped the sweat from her brow, then calmly undid her safe hand sleeve, tossed aside the foolish extra pouch she'd tied around her hand inside, then rolled the sleeve back to expose her still-gloved hand. Good enough. Adolin couldn't possibly expect her to put on sparring clothing. She pulled her hair back into a bun and fixed it in place with hair spikes from her satchel.
When Adolin returned to the room a moment later, he found a poised, calm woman who wasn't quite Shallan Devar. Brightness Radiant is her name, she thought. She will go only by title. Adolin carried two long, thin pieces of metal that somehow could meld to the front of shard blades and make them less dangerous for use in sparring. Radiant inspected them with a critical eye, then held her hand to the side, summoning pattern. The blade formed, a long, thin weapon nearly as tall as she was. Pattern, she said, can modulate his shape and will dull his edge to safe levels. I shan't need such a clunky device. Indeed, Pattern's edge rippled, dulling.
Storms, that's handy. I'll still need one, though.
Adolin summoned his own blade, a process that took him 10 heartbeats, during which he turned his head, looking at her. Shallan glanced down, realizing that she'd enhanced her bust in this guise. Not for him, of course. She'd just been making herself look more like Yasna. Adolin's sword finally appeared, with a thicker blade than her own, sinuous along the sharp edge, with delicate crystalline ridges along the back. He put one of the guards on the sword's edge. Radiant put one foot forward, blade lifted high in two hands beside her head.
Hey, Adolin said. That's not bad.
Shallan did spend quite a lot of time drawing you all. Adolin nodded thoughtfully. He approached and reached toward her with a thumb and two fingers. She thought he was going to adjust her grip, but instead he pressed his fingers against her collarbone and shoved lightly. Radiant stumbled backward, almost tripping.
A stance, Adolin said, is about more than just looking great on the battlefield. It's about footing, center of balance, and control of the fight.
Noted. So how do I make it better?
I'm trying to decide. Everyone I've worked with before had been using a sword since their youth. I'm wondering how Zael would have changed my training if I'd never even